And we do have quite a large group of folks here and online. So it is now my pleasure to introduce tonight's chair speaker. I'm pretty certain I met Jim at the Sunday night meeting here at Visalia many, many years ago when it used to be in the Blue Room at the hospital. Yeah. I think that's where we probably met. And it's been my great pleasure to call him Prince since. He's now in Fresno, and please give him a warm start. Come on.
There is a principle which is bar against all information, which is proof against all arguments, and which cannot keep a man in everlasting payments. That principle is against our investigation. You know, I always like to read that verse. I'm grateful and fortunate I'm calling. My name's Tim White.
Jimmy. Hey,
I like to welcome the newcomers. Those people newer than me. But you don't have a problem when you're drinking and having a problem. This is the place to be. Welcome home. Welcome to Alcoholics Anonymous. Because today, folks, is a great day. But it will get better. You know? But for the grace of God, I have not found it necessary to take a drink since June 7th, 1982. And for that, I will always be grateful. See? I have to remember that it is this program, this fellowship, and God that has got me where I'm at. And that I am not better than anybody else. I'm just a drunk that didn't have to take a drink today. Although you let me talk about me, I'll tell you how wonderful I am. You know, and that is why I'd like to welcome the newcomers before I get into anything I'm saying, because I might go off track to tell you how great I am and all this other stuff that's not necessary. But my life started out pretty good in Louisiana, a little town called Indiana, 5 years. I grew up there. My dad was a sharecropper, plant cotton. He had 7 cotton pickers. I was his latest model. I went to school at an all-black school till I reached the age 12, where then they integrated the schools, and I was bused from my house to 35 or 40 miles away to another all-black school. And the following year after that, I was made to go to an all-white school where life was not easy. People were not nice. But we did have principals and teachers that had their mindset that whoever showed up there would get an education. And that was something that I will cherish for a long time. That I did get a decent education from that place. See, although I learned to hate people in large quantities because I went to that school, I did get a good education that could carry me forward into building a decent life, provided that I would do the right thing. I didn't start drinking until I was like 18. I was a good kid, on through life. Everybody loved me. I come from a decent family. Everybody thought I was a great person. When you spoke up to Jim, everybody was happy to talk about him and say something good about him. And then one day I woke up, and nobody liked me. My social drinking period lasted about 30 minutes. You know, and after that, it was on. You know, I worked in the oil field, so therefore I made a lot of money. And what I liked was money, fast cars, and women. And a little scotch. Mm-hmm. Now when you mix all those together with a kid that's not ready for it, you have trouble. See? So at age 21, I inadvertently lost control of my automobile while traveling at a high rate of speed through something they call a curve. I don't know who put it on that road in the first place. I flew off the road, hit 3 pine trees. That was about this big. Just shaved them off and ended up in the field. This thing flipping. And the thing that came to my mind when it started flipping was, I have a pint of scotch in here. I hope it's okay. I found it. And I walked back to the street with it. And this lady says to me, are you okay? And I says, I'm okay. the highway patrol showed up, the guy looked at me, he said, look up, hey, you know, the big deal, they cited him for failing to throw a motor vehicle, fine with $33. Pay the lady on the way out. And I'm off to the races again. You know, shortly after that, and I don't mean shortly after that, we're talking a couple of months, I crash the next car in a telephone pole. I entered one of them engineering phenomenal things again in Louisiana on the curb. And I had red steam, and I went straight. And I took this telephone pole. This time I wasn't as lucky. I got arrested for operating a motor vehicle while intoxicated. In Louisiana, they call it an OWI. Don't drunkenly operate. Yeah. So therefore, I was operating this motor vehicle while I was intoxicated. They brought me over to their Paris jail. Bailed out. When I went to court, the fine was $125 plus cost of court. Came up to $157. Paid the lady on the way out. See, I left there and off to the races again. However, it's in a little letter talking about me going to something called Alcoholics Anonymous. I'm 21. And they sent me to this place at the courthouse in a big room with about 300 people in it and some old white guy talking about the evils of alcohol. And I'm thinking, if I ever got that old, I quit drinking too, because my life would be over. And this dude must have been like 40, 45 years old. You know? And he's talking about all this stuff. And the only thing I remember the man said, okay, he beat his wife up one morning because her car was in the food. He parked his garage in the same garage her car was, and her car ended up in the food, and he beat her over that. I never done anything like that, so I can't possibly be like him. I mean, I didn't have a house with a food. I didn't have a wife with a car. So. You know? But things kept going along. And I inadvertently got in trouble with the law. As they say in Louisiana, with the law. I discharged a firearm in the direction of another human being, thereby causing great bodily harm, which pissed them off real bad. You know, and they arrested me. But the judge was pretty cool. He said, since you like to shoot at people, I got a place for you. He said, you can go to a place with one of those folks sitting right there who give you a uniform that you can get stripes for. I'll give you a uniform with stripes on it. That's an easy decision. So I got up, started walking to the back, the neighbor crew stood up. I said, can I go with it? And he said that she'll have you. She turned to him and said, how long he's been looking for? He says, he's dead, baby. He'll do six. I understood what that meant. I can do six with her, or I can do six with him. I did not want to go where he had in mind. So I left off to the Navy we go. And I had a pretty good thing going with the Navy. I went through a little camp, no problem. I got the Great Lakes, going to school, no problem. Having a good time. Except, in the middle of my class, my school, they found me on the landing in the barracks in a little ball. And they transported me to the dental hospital at Great Lakes. And they put me in a detox ward. And this guy, George, came around with his little white uniform on and his little lieutenant bar and all the fancy medals and stuff. And George said to me, you have a drinking problem? I said, no. George says, well, if you have another incident, we'll take care of that, not problem. And he left. I get out of the hospital, I go back to school. A week later, they find me on the same landing in a little ball. I had what they call a pancreatitis attack. That was the second one. And the doctor said to me, if you have another one of them, you're not going to live. Come on, how many of you don't know more old drunks than you know old doctors? You know? And so, here I am in the hospital. Guess who shows up? George. And he's decked out with all this stuff. And George says, we're going to fix your problem. We're going to take you from here and bring you up to the night floor and put you in the ARC. So I did 6 weeks in the ARC and I did everything they told me to do, just the way they told me to do it. I even cried all the time. I even felt the pain they wanted me to feel. You know, I did all the stuff they wanted me to do. And they let me out. And I went back to the school and I finished my school with a 98.9% grade point average. If I can tell you, I am smart. I can read books and understand. Yeah. I left there from Great Lakes and it took me to O'Hara Airport. But when I got out to Pan, I got in double shot. I was 151. And I was off to the races again. I flew to Louisiana and visited my mother. She flew to San Diego. I stayed in Louisiana 2 weeks. I flew to San Diego. My mother flew back to Louisiana. I'm not going to say I was a bad kid, but I'm thinking that if you got to that point where your mother doesn't want to see you, you got a problem. But I couldn't see that problem.
See?
I couldn't see that there was something wrong. I got to the ship in San Diego and I met all the right people. I know that because I'm walking on board the ship and these guys are getting ready to leave. And one of them says, who are you? And I said, so I'm going to get kicked up there white. And he says, we're BTs. We're going out to get here. Do you want to go with us? I says, I stole my stuff. He says, I'll help you. Checked me into the ship, put my stuff on the boat, and we went to town. I really was with the right group. See, and for the next 6-9 months, that cruise was, we left just a few days later to go on cruise. And for the next 9 months, we visited 9 different countries. So I'm proud to say on the directed 8 things. Yeah. And we came back to San Diego. And then we went into the shipyard in Long Beach. And I joined something called the Navy Flying Team. That is every alcoholic's dream to have. To join the Navy Flying Team. Because we fly from one large event to the next. And we drink before we get there. We drink while we're going there. We drink while we're there. You know, we do a lot of great things. In fact, I have a picture of me at Ronald Reagan's inauguration. With the president saluting me. And I don't ever remember meeting the man. See, because we were at his inauguration with that big, big flag march. And so, as life progressed on, during that period of time, I was going to meetings for a little while, and I'd come back out. And I'd go to meetings elsewhere, and I'd come back out. I'd be where the meetings were in Japan, the meetings were in the Philippines, the meetings were in Hawaii. Long Beach, San Diego, Seattle, I knew where all these places had meetings at, because I had been to them, but I was still drinking. In April of 82, my commanding officers suggested that I go to meetings. I think he was suggesting that when I was at last, because he says you're going to meetings. And to make sure I went to meetings, he sent someone with me to the meeting and make sure I come back. And that's why I always said I didn't have a port card. I mean, I had 2 armed guards, but I didn't have a port card. You know? Well, like them losers that have to bring a card to get signed. How low do you have to get before you start relating to other people? You know? May 30th, I had been going to meetings about a month and a half. May 30th, 1982, I went up the one way, the wrong way, and hit a car head on. So, okay, the driver was all right, just standing on the sidewalk, writing a citation out to the woman he stopped. And that guy will never forget, because he ran over to my car and he pulled the door open, and I fell out. And he leaned down, as he's leaning down, he says, call an ambulance. He laid down over me, and he stood back up, and he says, never mind, that SOP is drunk. And then him and I had a few words on the sidewalk. I said, you wanted me to do that toe the heel thing that you do to see if you're drunk. And I told him he was a real Dick Tracy. I couldn't stand up and he wanted me to walk. Well, they cuffed me. And here I was, in jail again. A black man, being oppressed by a white man. Did I tell you I didn't like white people? That was the large group of people that I would identify as not black at one time. See? And I was in jail because the white man was trying to oppress me. And that's where I had my first turning point in life. And my life started to change. I didn't know it then, but it started to change. Before I'm sitting there in the drug tank, I'm watching this black guy stumble back and forth in the cell. And he's complaining because the white man is always trying to hold down. This is the fifth time he had been arrested for drug driving in 1982. I had enough whereabouts about me to understand that was about 1 month home where I was averaging. And I could clearly see he was drunk. And that's why he was there. Then it dawned on me that, maybe that's why I'm here. Not for sure, but it could be. You know, I see he came and got me. Gave me my stuff back, gave me my money back, and he said, you can go wherever you want, you can't drown now. Right? So I started drinking again, because that's what you do when you have as many problems as I had. See? And in the next couple of days, I bought myself a truck. And I was living in Los Angeles, a station in San Diego. And in the morning, at 3 o'clock, I popped up out of bed. And I went to the kitchen and I made myself a cocktail in one of those big tumblers. I put about this much top, that much scotch in it, and I top it off with a coarse beer. Drink it down, go to the bathroom, throw it up, get in the shower, take a shower, shave, brush my teeth, and I'm not making another cocktail like that about ready now. Drink it down, hop in my truck, and head to San Diego. And I'm all day right. Because right as I got to Oceanside, I hit that off ramp. And I make that circle and come up on the street. And there was a 7-Eleven right across the street. And I walked in there and walked to the back. He was just opening the box at 6 o'clock. I get 2 long neck Budweiser. I don't know how long it is in miles or minutes from that spot, the 32nd Street, but it's 2 long neck Buds. I knew that the very first time I ever drove there. And it's always been that. See? June 7th, I got up that morning. I didn't make my cocktail. I took a shower. Shaved, I brushed my teeth. I dressed, hopped in my truck, and headed to San Diego. And I'm running between San Clemente and Oceanside, and I looked at the clock on the dashboard, and I'm running about 10, 15 minutes early. And I had to make a decision about my stop and wait if I get to work early. I got to work early. And I've never taken a drink since then. See, because I believe somewhere along the way, God removed the desire of alcohol from me. From that night on the 6th when I stopped drinking, to that morning when I woke up. And I've never had to take a drink again. And the fun began. Because I had to go to meetings. And for babies, there was all these white people in meetings. It's not enough to have white people at work telling me what to do, not about the white people in meetings want to tell me what to do. I don't like the one at work, but I don't like the one in the meetings. And I don't like the one that died in the meetings or not at work either. I just didn't like them. And so, I'm going to these meetings. And this guy comes up to me, and he has been carded. On the card, it said John M. with a phone number, a business card. There was nothing else on it. He says, here. And then he's fine. I'm not looking for one. He says, I know you're stupid. Call me every day. I'll tell you not. He says, he is. Obviously, he did not know what he was thinking. So I didn't call him. And I went to the Wednesday meeting. John never go to that meeting. He walks in and he sits right next to me. And it says, when I tell an MF to call me, I mean them to call me. So you are going to call me every day till I tell you not. Came on. I went back to the ship. Took everybody level 30. He was asleep. He went down to the pier for a quarter of the phone. The ring finally woke up. He answered the phone. And I said, I'm calling you, asshole, but I hung up. And that's what I did. For about the next 16 months, I called that man every night I was in court. Never at the same time. But always between 11:30 and 2, 3 o'clock in the morning, when I knew I'd wake him up. Not one time did he tell me, don't call me at that time. Not one time did he say, quit calling me that. Not one time did the man say, there's a decent power to call people. See, but they sat out teaching me things I didn't know. How to do service work. See, and the first thing they decided I was going to do was wash ashtrays. That's when you used to smoke in meetings. There's a clock smoke about right here. In every AA room. You know. And I told him, I don't smoke. He says, I want you to smoke. I want you to clean ashtrays. You know, not the one thing you just have to do. Next time he decided I should put chairs out for everybody. I said, only sit in one. He says, then sit in one, but put the rest of them out. And he said the same thing again. You don't have to want to. You just have to. So I put it out. That's how people have to put them out. And then they decided to make me a greeter because John decided he was going to teach me how to be nice. See, because the nicest thing they ever said to anybody is, don't like it, I hope you die on the way home. That was about as close as I get to being nice. So John stood there at the door. First person come through the door, I shook his hand. Says, I'm Jim, I don't like people fail. You know. Welcome to the meeting. Can I get something for you? I'm not getting nothing for any of them. I don't like them. He says, you don't have to like them. You just have to do this. So I set out trying to do this, right? And then I went to the first night meeting, the next time. And John says, you're going to go around the room and tell everybody hello, and you're going to be nice about it. So I went around the room. First person I shook their hand, I said, I'm Bill, I'm not wrong. Because I deal with the next person, I'm Jill. Next person, change your name. Each person. And my friend Ellen says, well, wasn't that nice? You didn't cuss out one person. I didn't laugh like that. But this is what my first 18 months in Alcoholics Anonymous was like. I didn't read the book. I didn't do the steps. I didn't chair them in the meetings. I didn't even like those meetings. You know? In fact, you people made me sick. See? So, 18 months down the road, I called John. And I said, John, I think I'm losing my mind. And he says, rest easy. You can't lose what you don't have. He said, but I didn't know what's wrong. He says, get that big book again and come on over. We'll go through the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. I didn't even understand what he was talking about because I read his stuff. And he had to be out of his rabbit mind if he think that that was going to change my life or change my attitude or make me one of them. You know, but I go to John's house because I don't know what's going on. You know, I think I'm going crazy. Didn't know I was crazy already. I just need to enjoy it. And so I go to John's house, and he says, this is how it works. He says, step one is you're powerless. He says, we are powerless over alcohol. That means you've got no power over it. None, zero, zip. He says, that's all you need to know. Let's move on. He said, and your life has become unmanageable. He says, and I know I'm going to say something down that will cause you to read that book to go into. God will never give you manageability of your life again because you screwed it up. He says, now I'm on to step two. So step two says, came to believe. Now, I will pray to yourself and restore you to sanity. He says, all you have to do is believe. And this is what you need to know about God. There is one, it's not you. Now get on your knees, go ahead and step three. And I'm thinking, there's guys that was taking months to do these steps. And this guy's just tripping through a mic. So I get on my knees and we do it. Third step prayer. And he get up and he sat at the table and he gave me his long yellow legal pad with a red pen. And this is what he said about that pad. He said, when you write your fourth step up here, you will put down everything that's important. All your resentments. All the good things about you. He says, I'll help you out. The first day you was born was a good day. I know that because your mother didn't kill you. He says, so write down your birthday and start from there. You know. And I told him, I says, I thought a fourth step was everything I did wrong. And, you know, the people I didn't, he says, if you do only those things at the end of it, you're going to take a gun and shoot yourself in the face. Yeah. He says, there's got to be something good in you along the way. Or else you would have never made it this far. So I follow this instruction. And I'm writing on this pad. I'm writing probably 3 hours on this pad. And he sat right across the table with me with his cup of coffee. And he filled my neck until he got empty. And I'm writing. And I wrote up here. I did not write that. So be across the table. And I thought, oh, hell, he's going to see that. So make sure you don't see it. I lined it out. It's not there anymore. He's done with the fourth step. He throws a spin of all that man. We got to look at my part in it. He really didn't care what anybody else did. Because he had this theory in life that nobody gets up in the morning and come over to Jim White out and that's what because he didn't do anything wrong to Jim. He says, nobody wake up and say, let's go to Jim White's house and mess with him. Because he's been good to us. So you need to look at what you did wrong. What your part was in that call there. See, and we went from 1-5-1-5-1. And I told him, I says, what if there's something I missed? He says, I'm sure you were to take care of it when we get to it. But in the meantime, we'll take care of what you got here. See? That was my fifth step. At the end of my fifth step, John said to me, I'm going to go get us some lunch. I want you to sit here. And I want you to pray. And I want you to meditate. And if there's something you left out, we'll take care of it when I get back. So when he came back for the lunch, I told him there was a couple of things I thought of. He said, then we'll take care of it before you have your lunch. There's no sense messing up your lunch. He took care of those things. We had lunch. And this is what he told me about step six. He says, you have to humble yourself. If you're not humble looking at all this crap that you did, that you created, that you caused, you never will. And I says, I'm not sure I understand what humble means. He says, you are here today. You're sober today. You're working the steps today. And it's through no fault of your own. Because it has to be this program. It has to be this fellowship. And it has to be God. He says, because you can't do any of this stuff, Jim. You've proved that already. Look at the pad. Just read for yourself what you wrote. He said, and all you have to do is step seven is let God remove those defects of character. I said, and when will that happen? He says, I'm not God. I'm like, fine, I got him to admit you, but it's so great. But he did that part. See? And the time to go to a meeting. I went to a Saturday night meeting in San Diego called the Fremont Group on Fremont Avenue. And the very first time I got there, there was a tall, skinny guy. About 6 foot six. Tall, skinny black guy. We call him Starving Marvin. Starving Marvin stood in the doorway the very first time he saw me and said, God is love, love is God. Put his arms up above me. And I told him I was the next kind of a guy and what he could do with his God and what he could do with his love. And if he ever tried to hug me again, he'd draw back to rub the arm. Because I was not going to tolerate it. And every Saturday night I walked up that sidewalk, Starving Marvin was not in that doorway. He was giving somebody a cookie, a cup of coffee, or something. But he was not standing there. And that Saturday, I walked up the sidewalk. Starving Marvin stood in the doorway. And he opened his arms. And he says, God is love. Love is God. And that's the first time I hugged anybody in an AA meeting. You know, I sat down and thinking, these people are changing. They're awful nice. I was so sharp and bright that I didn't notice that I was the one that was changing. In fact, I told that my sponsor later on, why is everybody in the meetings growing except me? And he says, Jim, if you can see growth in other people, it's because you have growth in you. The only thing he told me God requires of me to face over is to pass this message on to other people that there's life after Budweiser. There's life and life more abundantly after Budweiser. Since that time, I finished a naval career. I'm a ordained licensed pastor. Yeah, I'm a Baptist pastor, so don't get excited by that. But I understand the day that my life changed because of the people in Alcoholics Anonymous. This program, this fellowship, and God had to understand him. Understand him to be Jesus Christ, our Lord and Savior. I have a great life today. I'm going to shut up in a couple minutes because I'm not all that great. But what I do have is I have a 40-year-old daughter that's never seen me trip. I have 5 kids, never seen me drink. I have a wife that never seen me drink. I have 13 grandkids that never seen me drink. I felt really good about that until one day I realized that was because of all of you people that I have those things. Not because I'm such a great person. If you let me tell the story, I'll tell you that I didn't build Jack Latrobe. Alcoholics Anonymous did not give me a second chance. He gave me my only chance. Because I never was about Jack. No. So I look at my life today, and I can relate to people that's doing decent things in life today. In 1984, Jesse Jackson stood at the Democratic Convention, and he gave a speech. I don't remember the whole speech, but I remember the title of it. It says, Our Time Has Come. And in that speech, he had a line that he used. We have come from disgrace to amazing grace. And every time I go into a meeting, I look around the room, and I see people come from disgrace to amazing grace. As a small town, I filled with my father and listened to the late, great Thomas Martin Luther King give his mountaintop speech, where he speaks of soaring to the top of the mountain. Looking over in the Jordan, seeing the Jordan, and knowing you will never walk in it. Tonight I'm here to thank you for letting me walk in the Jordan, teaching me how you get there. Because family, if nobody's told you that they love you and they care about you, I most certainly do. Because today is a great day, but it will get better. Thank you.
Thank you, Jim. Thank God Almighty. So, we're now going to start the discussion portion of the meeting. We would like to hear from as many different people as possible. So again, just please keep in mind how much time you use when you share, so we can give everybody a chance to participate. And I'm going to turn the meeting back over to Jim and let him pick on people to share. So we have our in-person guests here, and then we have our online guests, and we can go back and forth.
Oh, okay. I write this name here, Victor.
All right, Victor, you're up. Victor has left the building. He was in there.
He was. All right, well, let's talk about Victor.
We'll talk bad about Victor. let's go with Stephanie.
Stephanie and I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Stephanie.
And it was great to see you, Jimmy. It's great to hear your story. It gave me goosebumps. And I'm grateful to be sober today. It's been one heck of a ride for me. And I'm still trying to grow every day. And I'm still grateful for my sobriety every single day. And after that, I'm looking to come back.
Thank you, Stephanie.
There's a Marla online.
Hey, Marla.
Marla, you're going to have to unmute yourself.
Hi, I'm Marla. I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Marla.
Hi, this is my third meeting today. That's a pretty big event. I haven't done that for some years, but I feel pretty lucky to be able to hang out with people that are sober. I just want to be with sober people. I don't want to hang out with people that are drinking. So, yeah, that's what I did today. My air conditioner went out on Friday, so I've got 80 degrees in here, but I can't really find any reason to drink. And I hope I die sober. That's like one of my goals. I want to die sober. I don't want my kids or grandkids to see me drinking or drunk or anything like that. I certainly don't want to have any car wrecks or cause anybody any grief. I feel like I had enough grief in my life for a whole lifetime, and I know what happens that if I drink, I don't know what will happen. And a lot of people like to share in meetings that they'll go back to the way that it was. But nobody really knows that. Nobody knows if they get drunk that they'll wreck a car or kill another person or kill themselves. And I kind of don't want my grandkids to say, oh, my grandma got drunk and killed some people, you know. So I'm just happy that I have the tools that you people have taught me, the tools to try to live in the world. I mean, it's not a bowl of cherries, of course, every day. We're having maybe more challenges than we've ever had before. I'm not really sure. So, yeah, thanks for letting me share, and I hope you all have a perfect night. And thanks for letting me hang out with you guys. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Darren?
Yeah, hey. I'm Darren on hold.
Yeah,
Darren. Yeah, I can definitely relate to a lot of I have hard time getting close to people. About that social life, I don't know why. I try, but I think it's because in this area and the way I grew up, a lot of these genres, you know, and mixed beliefs about everything. You know, I just want to be, you know, I'm not sticking to someone else's beliefs about anything. I believe what I believe, I do what I do. You know, if you're good to me, I'm good to you. You know, I've been prison a lot, and I never really agree with your politics. I still don't. You know, I'm 2 months sober now, and that's, you know, it's a big deal, but it's not. I don't really have any choices with it. But, you know, I don't want to be drinking or doing anything else anymore because it was a miserable way to live. I did nothing but hurt people in my body.
Sure.
No. Well, I mean, I did care about and do love. I was definitely hurting them. I didn't know that at the time. I was like, no. Well, you know, when you love someone, seeing them do that to themselves is a very thing. It's an extreme issue. Because you can't do a damn thing to help them until they're ready to help themselves. You know, and that's just horrible to swallow. And no, finally seeing the truth of that, for God's sake, it took me almost 30, 40 years to see this. And I'm a pretty smart guy. It's like, I can't believe that I was such a dumbass in that regard. You know, and this last time before I came back to get this tape on channel, I lost everything. That breakup, got back on some things I'll mention here. It took me to the streets for a year and a half, lost everything. Couldn't find a place to rent. I mean, I had money. Couldn't find a place to rent. I'm sure there was a store, couldn't find a place for it. I tried at my mom's, she wouldn't let me drive it. I asked her not to let me drive it. What am I going to have to save myself from me? That could be like her dog to help me save myself from me.
Yeah, I'm glad I did.
There's only one person I knew in this whole world, and all they tell me, yeah, that's mom. That's great, I love this. So, today, you know, we have a great relationship. I cherish her, and it deserves a lot of time. She just couldn't even look at me. She's sad. Or very. She almost lost me. I almost died this last time. I'm a heart patient. I came down with heart failure so bad that I had 12% EF rate. That suggestion question, that it said divide that measurements of each side of the heart, how it works. Well, my left side failed. I lost blood to my brain and the rest of my body. I was pulling blood when I was laying down to sleep. And my skin was flat out. And I'm half scared and force myself off around pins and needles, feeling cramping. It was one of the worst painful things I've ever felt in my life. I didn't even have to move around, I was just hot. I was just hot around that. Had some bad things happen before. But I always had someone else to blame for that. This was all my fault. So I had to talk with them upstairs and bring this about today. Making a full recovery problem. So I mean, I'm down to 9 days. I'm not even going to have to take my diabetes anymore. I changed my diet. The way I exercise. I'm getting most of my weight back. I'm close to 230 right now, and I was 250 solid muscle. You know, working on diesels. You know, I got another chance of buying. This time I'm not going to make the same mistakes. I'm going to prepare myself and keep some distance between me and if I ever get involved in another relationship. Because I let that relationship take me down where I'm going. Something happened, I let myself go in the process. I'm not going to blame anymore. I should blame myself for not being prepared for something like that. Because it shouldn't matter. I remember it shouldn't depend on what another person does. I feel sorry for myself. I didn't get to turn the cat and run. You know what I mean? Get some perspective. And tearing yourself down just so someone else, it's not a smart thing to do. It's very
you're not prepared to die, then you don't want to be here. So, but I'm glad to be here to find out 10 months and find everybody else here, making recovery, enjoying life for what it is, blessing and gift. Thank you.
Thank you, Darren.
Thank you,
Darren. Congratulations on 10 months, buddy.
Thanks. That's pretty cool. Anthony! Anthony still online?
Yes, sir. Hi there. My name is Anthony. I'm an alcoholic. Thank you for your share. Thank you for leading the meeting. It was definitely from listening to people like you that showed me that AA works, you know, because you drank how I drank, you know, regardless of the consequences, I kept at it. And, you know, I know speaking for myself, I tried every method I could think of to fix the problem on my own, but it wasn't until I formed a relationship with God and got into AA that I found some relief. And, you know, sometimes things happen, you know, if I lose touch with my higher power, if I don't maintain my spiritual condition, I find myself with a drink in my hand again, you know, and that's not a good place to be. But, you know, I know that AA worked before and that it will and is working again. And, so I'm, back in this program and, very happy to be here. And, I'm thankful for people like you sharing your stories, because again, that's what led me here to begin with. So, thank you for letting me share.
Thanks, Anthony.
Thank you.
Anthony. You know, lady in the corner.
Yeah. I'm just a visitor.
You just a visitor?
Yeah.
Welcome.
Oh, welcome. Are you a visitor? Hello, Leah.
So, first, I don't know if you felt it, but I felt it when you started speaking, I felt my soul actually help me down a little bit. And then to say something that I need to hear. And then one of those things was many things, but one of those things that you were talking about how about growth, and that you recognize growth in yourself, you recognize growth in people, you know, and I was going to stay at home and do my online reading, you know, at home. I was talking to my daughter, and I was like, yeah, I'm going to go to the sitter, I'm just going to stay here and join me online and do my reading here. And my daughter listened and she goes, come on, what do you mean? You need to be there as a person. She's 7, mind you. And I'm like, I want you to be okay and make those good choices for me. Just to call them good choices or bad choices. So yeah, see, when you said that, my 7-year-old recognized the change in me, you know, since she's thriving with that, she's wanting me to keep doing the things I'm doing that keep me safe, that keep me the mom that she likes, the mom that she loves, you know. And maybe the lunch moment until you said that, you know. I struggle with myself as you go to the people. Thank you, David.
Thanks, Leah. And I'll remind all of our guests here to please use your outside voice so our online guests can hear you.
My voice is struck a lot
today.
Craig, you'll have to unmute yourself.
Are you with us, Craig? I'd love to have you share if you'd like to. I don't see any action here with the microphone, so.
Okay.
Hey, we'll come back to Craig.
Bear. The Bear and a Bear group real quick.
Hey, Bear. Thanks for sharing with us, Jimmy. I think it's probably about the third or the fourth time I've heard you share. So. And the thing about it is, unlike some people I know that share their experience and their strength and hope, I always get something new, something different. I kind of lose it nowadays. I was asked to share over here a couple months ago, I guess. I can't remember how long ago it was, but I've just reached a point in my sobriety where I just want to be quiet and listen and learn from others who don't. I was told real early in my program that I needed to take the cotton out of my ears and stuff in my mouth. And I've done that a few times, you know. And there have been often times where I've shared in meetings, and I did it back a couple months ago. I don't apologize for it, but my wife got on my case for it. I spent a good 20 or 25 minutes in an hour meeting sharing it. And she told me, she says, it wasn't a speaker meeting, dude, but I sometimes get carried away. I'm there and I'm glad you're here. I'm stoked about the sobriety that I see in other people. You know, I heard two really great speakers today at Springville, and I really enjoyed it. It was a dynamite meeting. I'm getting into 50-50 graph plus at this point. Deciding it's an extra spending money. But someone told me I had enough. So, okay. You know, every day, sometimes in the morning, sometimes it's late in the morning, sometimes it's early, I read the daily reflections and the 24-hour book. And some other materials that I have. And I oftentimes allow myself the opportunity to meditate on what I've read. And what I've read today, this 24-hour book, has to do with building my house on the rock. And I really enjoy that, because if it hadn't been for the people that I ran into, which are probably pretty close to the same people as Jimmy ran into, I wouldn't be here today. You know, there were some people. My first sponsor, he was a real asshole from the word go. I would walk into a meeting and he'd be standing there with a bunch of people, and he'd turn around and look and say, "Well, Bear, I can tell you by the way you're walking, you forgot to turn it over today."
What are you talking about?
You know? And I went through a few good ones because of transfers and stuff like that being in the Navy. I finally asked one old guy, an old fart that I saw in meetings, and I oftentimes really enjoyed listening to him. And I used to kind of take him back and forth from his house to meetings. And the sponsor that I had, he already transferred out. I was looking for another sponsor. And I turned to him and I said, "Clancy, I need another sponsor." And he looked at me and said, "Yeah." And I said, "Well, I was wondering if you'd be sponsoring me."
And he said, son, I've been sponsoring you this whole damn time. You know, what I appreciated about him is, and I do it, I don't often do it as much as maybe I should, I don't know. I oftentimes sit around and think to myself that when I hear somebody talking out of the side of their neck, I have a real problem with that. And I have a real problem with people saying you, 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 instead of talking about themselves. And I oftentimes, I sat in a meeting one time with Clancy, and there was a kid, fairly new in sobriety, probably maybe about 6 days, if that. And he started talking. And he got through about maybe 2 or 3 minutes, and Clancy piped up and said, "Hey man, you need to sit down and shut up. We're talking about sobriety in this room." I kind of went, "Whoop me up." I went, "Holy shit." So after the meeting, I turned to Clancy and I said, "Well, Clancy, what did you do that for? What happened?" He said, "Son, Alcoholics Anonymous is for people who work. And it's for people who want to be able to stay sober, at least for today. And if you're carrying the message, that's fine. But if you're carrying the mess, I won't allow that to happen." And I, that's kind of rub off on me, you know? And I've heard a lot of good things tonight. And today's meeting at Springville, and I really enjoyed that. I enjoy the fact, you know, if you're new in this program, I've said it numerous times. If you're new in this program, hang on your ass, because you're in for the ride of your life. You know, Nick, Harris Fields, Humble Parkers, they don't make any roller coaster that's going to be, I don't give a shit how high you might think a roller coaster's going to be. The fact of the matter is, if you stay sober, I'll guarantee you're going to be higher than the fucking roller coaster. Might dip down a little bit on it, but that's okay. As long as you stick with the program of Alcoholics Anonymous and stick with the people, stick with the winners. Stick with the winners. There's a few of the winners here in all of the guys in this room. If you're sitting in an Alcoholics Anonymous game, you're a winner. As far as I'm concerned. So anyhow, thank you for sharing with us, son. And my God, I learned something new. You know, Jimmy is my best friend, and I learn something new about him every time he shares. And this time I'm thinking to myself, what the fuck do I have headed for a best friend?
Thanks, Bear.
Thank you, Bear.
Desiree.
Desiree.
Hello, Desiree, alcoholic addict.
Hi, Desiree.
Hello, thank you. First of all, thank you for sharing. You know, I always relate to something somebody, anybody shares. You know, I can say today I'm grateful to be in this meeting. The one before I was very full of anger and I did feel grudges against certain people, you know, I remember I used to hate when they would come up to me and try to welcome me and be friendly, and I would be mad. I'll be like, what the hell are they trying to talk to me? You know, like, leave me alone. And I considered myself humble at that time. So, yeah, I didn't really know what that meant. I'm glad that with the meetings and I'm glad I decided to get a sponsor, you know, and I'm working step 3. And, you know, that's made a big difference for me. It's turned my life around a lot, big time. Like, I feel like it brought my soul back into my body, you know? I was very suicidal and hated God for keeping me here. I used to hate living and I hated him because he would keep me here and he would take people that I felt deserved to live, you know, instead of like me. And today I want to live. I want to, like, I value life now. I want to be with my family. I like to spend time with my family now. You know, I see things very different, and it's a good, you know, like, I never thought being sober would actually be happiness. I always thought that alcohol was happiness, you know, or drugs, both. because it wouldn't know my feelings, but these feelings I feel now are pretty good, you know, they're nice, peaceful. And I can say I'm proud of myself today for making certain decisions, you know, and before I was a mess, I was a complete mess. And I'm actually considering, like, doing things for myself now, you know, like going back to school and you know, things that benefit me now. And I never did before, because I never valued myself. I didn't think I had a purpose, but today I feel I do. And, yeah, I'm glad I get to come to these meetings, you know, and everybody who shares is motivation to me. Thank you. That's all I got.
Desiree,
thank you. Thank you, Bill.
Hey. Thanks, Jim. I'm now public school husband.
Hey, Bill.
I don't know if this will make a lot of sense, but I had this this notion. I should tell you guys the story first. My dad had this motorcycle, and he'd asked me a number of times if I was interested in it, and he let me use it one time, and then it kind of felt like he was just dangling this carrot out in front of me, right? Because after that, I could never get him to loan it to me again. I offered to buy it, and he just, you know, he wasn't done with it kind of thing. And I was with my men's group one day when I was complaining about my dad and how he was toying with me, right? And it just so happened because I'm a regular participant in that group that they know more of the story, and some of the story that I had forgotten, if you want to know the truth, conveniently. And one of the guys asked me, "Weren't you almost killed in a motorcycle accident, you know?" And I was like, "Oh shit, that's right." And when I was drunk, man, you know? And he goes, "You think maybe he's reluctant to give you a motorcycle because the last time you had one, you almost killed yourself? I mean, is it possible that he might just be afraid for your life and he's actually trying to protect you and not torment you? Is that possible?" And of course, I didn't want to hear that, right? And and then several months after that, my dad gave me the motorcycle, and I thought, "What, are you trying to kill me?" Right? And so I had my dad's motorcycle for I don't know, for probably about a year, and then I got an opportunity to buy another motorcycle that I was really excited about, And the day that I was riding that motorcycle home, I got in a really unusual crash. I wrecked the bike on my maiden voyage, right? It was a stupid little accident. I kind of rationalized and justified that I was going through a construction zone, and you know, I mean, it could happen to anybody. And so I brought the motorcycle home, got some repairs made to it, and then continued to ride it for quite some time. And then I was riding up in the mountains with a friend of mine, and I actually rode the bike over the hill. This is like up towards Shaver Lake, right? And, I mean, if you ride over the hill up there, it's like almost certain death for sure, right? But because of the recent fires, there were these mounds of chipped wood, of chipped trees, right, that were on the hillside. And I slid into the road, which is not always a good thing. In this case, probably was a good thing. And the motorcycle launched and landed in a pile of wood chips just off the road. And it shook me. And I thought, you know what? I don't want to die. I don't, you know, God saved me, again, because I don't know where he put a wood chip pile there, you know, but anyway, I got the bike towed back home, and I promptly sold it, and I decided that it was in my best interest to live and to not have a motorcycle. And I've still got my dad's motorcycle in my garage, and my dad's got an emotional attachment to the bike, so he doesn't want it to be sold, and so I just have to have it in my garage. Just put it in. And this weekend, I had to go to Tulare twice. And, you know, gas prices being what they are, I was thinking to myself, I'm going to ride the motorcycle over to Tulare. And I was going to ride it to that men's meeting, that home group that I have. And then I started thinking about how if I rode up at that men's meeting on a motorcycle, these guys, they would just be, they'd just be flabbergasted. Just the same, they would react the same way, if you know the story, that the guy that Bill Wilson met on the bus, right, on the way to the golf course. Bill's telling this guy on a bus about how tragic his relationship with alcohol is, and the bus breaks down in front of a bar. And they go in for a sandwich. And it's Armistice Day. It's Veterans Day, basically, right? And the bartender decides to buy a round for the house. And Bill drinks it. And the guy is looking at him like, are you out of your mind after everything you just told me, right? And that image flashed through my mind, and I thought, well, I can't ride the motorcycle to the men's group because they'll have my ass. And then I thought, oh, I'm more worried about the guys who care about me criticizing me than I am about saving my own money. I mean, that is the definition of insanity, right? And the reason I bring that up is just because I have to pay attention to stuff like that because you know what that is? That's a really, really kind and gentle reminder from God about just how insane I can be. And in this case, it was about a motorcycle. And it was rationalized and justified in all kinds of sorts of ways, but the same kind of logic in this brain applies to taking a drink or maybe just a little, you know, non-habit-forming line of methamphetamine or, I don't know, any of those.
Non-habit.
This is the brain you're working with here. I'm gonna claim my seat right here with you and Alcoholics Anonymous. I'm gonna keep calling my sponsor every week like I do, and keep working those steps and those traditions and those concepts, and keep hanging around with good men like this guy right here. Thanks for letting me share.
I tell you something, I remind myself every day I still have the same brain I used to drink with. Your handwriting.
Leah.
Leah online. You have the Leah over here already shared.
Yeah. Leah, are you still with us online? Leah's iPhone? Leah, going once, twice? Yeah, well, we're glad you're here with us.
Gentleman right there on the corner in the couch.
That's Eric.
Eric.
Reserved from an alcoholic. Stationed in Louisiana for about a year and a half in the Army. 1990 to 91. I got two OUIs there in Louisiana, Louisiana.
I see.
Had a real big resentment towards the police department there. And I did community service, and I'd go do it. And I think I left there owing them some community service time because I finally got kicked out. I got kicked out in 91. And I'd served my 2 years that I signed up for, so I thought, you know, I did my 2 years there. I enlisted for 2 years, and I went in drinking. And when I went through maps here in Fresno, I got drunk the first night there, and a real bad hangover, doing all the orientation the next day. As soon as I got to my basic training in Fort Dix, New Jersey, I didn't get to drink for almost like a month. And then we snuck out, and I got drunk, and that's just my whole Army career was drinking. And towards the end of Louisiana, I bought a car, and I thought that was going to help me to get around. So I started drinking and driving. I wasn't even in the car. And the police officer pulled up, and my friend had been driving, and he took off, and he was acting like a... I thought he was acting like a bitch, you know. And he took off, and I was there standing outside the car, and it was raining. And police pulled up, and they asked me if I'd been driving. And I was in such a state of blackout. I don't even remember telling them anything. They arrested me for a DUI, and that was my first one. And I got out in 91, and I didn't get a drunk driver for 10 years, but I drank a lot here. Never got in any accidents. I didn't so much a car one night, but it was just a vintage bumper. And I took off. I didn't even tell them the thing. But I did a lot of drinking and driving. And, you know, when I drink, I like to drive. And, but nobody's going to take my keys from me. My last drunk was a drunk driver, and that was almost 20 years ago on July 17th, and I haven't had a drink since. And it's been hard. My parents both passed away this last year, and that's been really hard. I think to myself, I understand when people drink their death, you know, it's really difficult, and you know, but my mom and dad would be happy to know that I'm still not drinking. Thank you for being here. Thanks for being here.
Thanks, Eric.
Thank you, Eric.
Hey, we're just about out of time, but I know that we did call on Leah earlier, and she wasn't able to get her phone unmuted. Leah, would you like to share this briefly?
Yes. Can you hear me now?
Yes.
Okay. My name is Leah. I'm an alcoholic. This is my second meeting. I became an alcoholic about 5 years ago. Recently though, I did stop drinking for a good 2 years, and then my granddaughter passed away. She was only 4 years old, and that's what started me back again. So she was only four, and that was in December, and so I have a life story, but it's a long story. Basically, my husband, soon to be ex-husband, was the reason for me to start drinking again. Because when my granddaughter was passing away, he didn't care. So he's not the real father of my daughter and my granddaughter. And that's what makes it hard for me. But I'm a strong person, and I know I can do it again. I can be sober again. Sorry, guys. Sorry.
Hey, we're glad you're with us, Leah. There's several ladies here with us tonight. Probably be a really good idea to get some phone numbers, and we're glad that you're here with us tonight. Thanks for joining us.
Okay.
All right. The Valley Group encourages sponsorship and service to our fellowship. We invite you to come early and to stay after the meeting, get better acquainted with our fellowship.